Okay, we're back on tape with Mrs. Nugent.
Or Ms. Yeah, Nugent. Yeah. At the time, I thought that her labs were creative. I mean, we didn't have a lot of props and supplies. Mm-hmm. But with what she had, she seemed to have made do. Because mm-hmm. I don't remember sitting around bored. Mm-hmm. So it must have been that she made do well enough. I remember we had to do things in groups. So there wasn't mm-hmm. enough for everybody. And when we had mm-hmm. dissections, it was group. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe one table of four would have a frog or a pig. But she involved you. Mm-hmm. That's what I think made a difference. Also, she was so vivacious mm-hmm. that if you wanted to fall asleep in her class, it would be very difficult to uh-huh. do. You would have to be pretty, mm-hmm. you know, pretty tired to do that. The other teacher, that science teacher I had that was good, was my chemistry mm-hmm. teacher. She was a nun, Sister Kathleen McKinney. And Kathy McKinney was also my senior year homeroom teacher. She was an interesting person. She was very in tune to young women. None of us could understand why she was a nun. Why in God's name would you choose to be a nun? You could be married, can't you? You know? So it was, she loved science. She loved her chemistry. She also, she wasn't like the Charlie Brown teacher. She mm-hmm. taught, had a lot of inflection in mm-hmm. her voice. You could tell that she liked the chemistry. She gave good demos in her labs. She also taught some physics. I did not have, did I have her for physics too? Maybe not. Mm-hmm. Physics I didn't like. So that just blends into the background. But I guess the fact that the two that stick out were two that really enjoyed what they were doing. And they had a talent for teaching, and it was by engaging their students. And Kathy McKinney now is principal of the academy.
Oh.
And we had our 25th reunion. No, our 20th, sorry. 20th reunion 2 years ago. And she came.
Oh.
Same face. A lot of gray hair. She had the same enthusiasm as before, and when I heard that they had just made her principal, I thought that was so great mm-hmm. because she really had a way with the students, with kind of figuring out, you know, different personalities mm-hmm. and what would be good for them. That came out when she was our homeroom teacher. Mm-hmm. She also was like the dean for different grades, the, mm-hmm. the year ahead of mine. She was the dean mm-hmm. for that grade. And at that point, I think that was a big job for her because she was probably in her 20s
wow.
at the time. And, you know, to have a lot of, well, see them 14, 15, 16, 17, you sure. know, going through those periods when she was probably going from like 25 to 29 herself. Mm-hmm. It was kind of unusual that you're the dean of those people. So that sure. was, they were pretty wild ones that she had to keep track of. But I think that having some very strong, there were a lot of women who taught at Mary Lewis. So having a lot of strong women who were very good teachers. And I think not having boys in the room allowed us for a much different and more of a nurturing, I think, kind of an education. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that was something I felt more or less at the time, and now in retrospect, that made a big, big difference. Mm-hmm. I was shy. You know, once I opened up, then it was a different story. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I was very, 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 very shy. Mm-hmm. And part of that is, you know, if you come from a conservative family and you're brought up within a religious environment, you're taught to respect your elders, you don't talk mm-hmm. back and things mm-hmm. like that. And so I would say to an extent, there's a problem with that. Mm-hmm. In that, at least with me, it took me too long to learn to express my opinions mm-hmm. outwardly. You know, on paper, I'd be fine. And if I were participating in a lab exercise or in a sport, mm-hmm. no problem mm-hmm. in my physical expression. But if it meant asking questions or challenging ideas verbally, mm-hmm. that was not me. That didn't happen until graduate school. So college, I didn't ask more than two questions in 4 years mm-hmm. because I felt either that it was a stupid question, yet nobody ever told me that I asked mm-hmm. stupid questions. I mm-hmm. just assumed, mm-hmm. you know, because I knew the answers to so many questions that ones that I didn't know the answers to, it's either something trivial or people will think I'm stupid mm-hmm. that I didn't know that and I should have known it or whatever, or I'm not going to word it correctly. I'm going to word it in a way that's going to make it seem like. So that was one thing that I felt maybe about a parochial school, parochial schooling, that may have been a bit of a hindrance, was that, you know, it may be a little too much discipline. Mm-hmm. Or probably my personality was such, because mm-hmm. there were plenty of people that were always raising their hands and mm-hmm. asking 100,000 questions and were outward. So I think that it just took me longer to lock into that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in retrospect, I've even said that if I had a daughter, to this day, I probably would send her to Mary Lewis mm-hmm. for high school mm-hmm. because I do believe that it was a very nurturing environment. Mm-hmm. And now that I see things presented scientifically where boys yeah. and girls are separated in the classroom and how performance is different, mm-hmm. if for no other reason than that, mm-hmm. I would advocate it. Mm-hmm. But the fact that the Academy still can say that more than 95% of the girls that graduate go to college, mm-hmm. that alone is worth it. Mm-hmm. It means they're preparing you well mm-hmm. for it, and I view that as an extremely valuable mm-hmm. tool, life tool. Mm-hmm.
So you were saying that, you know, your parents thought that, you know, the high school diploma was a big achievement and that after that you were sort of on your own. Did they get you? I mean, did they understand this drive that you had now?
No. No, if anything. Well, my father is very laid back. Uh-huh. He's the quiet one. Uh-huh. My mother is outgoing. Uh-huh. And she will not hesitate to tell you when she disagrees uh-huh. with something. She felt that I should get a job and start earning money. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? You want to still go to school? It's on your ticket now. So if anything, it was viewed in a negative mm-hmm. way, going to college. And I said, but, you know, if I want to be a doctor, I can't not go to college. So in that sense, then she thought it was okay, because you have to. Mm-hmm. And her reason for, let's say, wanting to support the notion of me becoming a doctor was based perhaps more on money and prestige that comes with the medical profession.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not, you don't hear about starving doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe nowadays with managed health care, they are not earning as much as before, but still, we're not going to hear that any of them are starving,
right.
Or will we be hearing about their being unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
So she felt that it was a stable career, you would earn a lot of money, and it was very prestigious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So for those reasons, she was supportive of it. But it meant that what they said they would do would pay, they would pay my books, pay for my books in college, but the tuition I had to take care of myself.
Mm-hmm. So is that what made you decide to go to the City University? Because that was pretty, I imagine, pretty inexpensive. At least
yeah.
It was when I remember it.
Yeah. That was part of it. The other part was being from a conservative family.
Mm-hmm.
The view was that if you were not married, you do not leave home.
Uh-huh.
Only wild girls live away okay. from home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it being linked up, moving from home to go to college, that thought could not be, you know, rationalized with mm-hmm. still being, quote-unquote, a respectable
mm-hmm.
girl. Mm-hmm. So it meant that I was going to have to stay in the New York City area and commute.
Mm-hmm.
I think also having come from, you know, not just a conservative family, but having been in a, more or less a conservative environment
mm-hmm.
in the parochial schools, I wasn't emotionally ready to go out on my own. I wasn't being prepared for that,
mm-hmm.
Neither at home nor at school,
mm-hmm.
to go away. And some of it, I think, is just me.
Mm-hmm.
Was just the way I was kind of shy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thought of going away, I think, was just too much to
mm-hmm.
think about.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't being presented to me as mm-hmm. even an option. So I decided that Mary Lewis is located very near to St. John's. And a lot of students kind of just automatically went from Mary Lewis to St. John's University. And, well, maybe I should say I mean no disrespect to St. John's, but it had its heyday in the 60s and the early 70s. But by the time I graduated high school, by the late 70s, it wasn't an academic mecca.
Mm-hmm.
The tuition, it was not horrifying. It was probably about $2,500. That number sticks in my head. Certainly that was a lot more than what the City University of New York was. But at that point, I felt that I should go to a place where I wasn't going to rack up big bills,
mm-hmm.
where I could get a really good education, not just
mm-hmm.
an all right education.
Mm-hmm.
And I also felt that it was time to not be in a parochial school anymore,
mm-hmm.
for whatever that meant.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think that waiting until after college to, quote-unquote, integrate
uh-huh.
with the rest of the world, even though, you know, on my street we had the melting pot of society, I still think that it was important to do it then. Man, it was a shock. Queens College was then considered the jewel in the crown of the City University, and still is. I guess many years ago, City College was it. And City College has probably produced more Nobel laureates than any other university. City College isn't any longer the top-ranked school within the City University. I think Queens College still is.
Mm-hmm.
And it was near to home. I could walk there, about a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
So you get some exercise in. A number of friends from the neighborhood had gone there.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow, naively, I thought I would know people. You go there, and there are just strange faces everywhere.
How many students there at the time?
I couldn't even guess. I don't know how many there are now. Day school, I'd say 8,000. I know that's nothing compared, like Ohio State, 40,000 or something like that. But it was tens of thousands, maybe tens of thousands in total between day and night. And the graduate programs and stuff. There were a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I felt invisible.
Mm-hmm.
And that was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe to go away to school, and I think you probably have more of a sense of a class and that you're in it together. A commuter college where you just are dumped into this sea of strangers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I felt like nobody. And that nobody was watching after what I was doing. Like I had no advice on what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly I was among many religious Jews. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow. This is different. This is a lot different. Also, it was at the period of, when I went to high school, was during the period, a lot of unsettlement between blacks and whites, black power, the Afro sort of generation.
Right.
And that was still lingering into college.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I'd say that was a little unsettling.
Mm-hmm.
So you had that faction in part of the student union. There were many Jewish organizations and many Jewish newspapers, which I wasn't used to. Suddenly I'm in the minority, and then I feel like I don't know anything about these people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget the first week of school, picking up one of the newspapers. I didn't realize it was one of the Jewish newspapers. Picked it up. They were talking about anti-Semitism. And I read what was going on there, and it didn't seem to be, it seemed like it was an issue that was being blown out of proportion. What they were turning into a front page story. And then, you know, I started realizing a little bit more about, you know, the history of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So as it had been taught to me in a parochial school, and, you know, within the context you learn that, you know, many religious people, not just Jews, were persecuted during that time period. So, you know, I was looking at this and I was seeing things presented in a whole different way, but also things that seemed to be like almost 30 years old. You know, they're making issue today.
Mm-hmm.
And why is this? I didn't understand why this was.
Mm-hmm.
And in some respects, it seemed to be setting up more of a gap between people instead of an integration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just viewed religion that, you know, if there is one God, people are so different. You can't all. It would be so smart to separate your faith or faithful people into factions because different types of people can accept things in certain ways mm-hmm. and would prefer to practice in certain ways. So, you know, to me, I felt, well, I studied the Bible, so I learned the New Testament as well as the Old Testament. Now, I couldn't understand what the big fuss was that was going on. So mm-hmm. a lot of my freshman year was just getting used to other kinds of people and yeah. people seeming to want their individuality and to be able to carve a niche mm-hmm. And issues. Everything was an issue. And I just wanted to find a place where I felt a little comfortable.
Uh-huh.
It took me almost 2 years to find that over there. And I think mm-hmm. at the end of 4 years, I kind of felt like I had belonged. Yeah. But that, my education was extremely good.
Uh-huh.
The experience, you know, so after I said that the high school years were among the best.
Mm-hmm.
Followed by turmoil of college,
yeah.
which was among the worst.
Yeah.
And so if I had to do anything over, that would probably be part of it. I would not stay and be a commuter mm-hmm. college student.
Mm-hmm.
It was rough.
Yeah.
Too rough. And I think it took a lot of the whole experience that I hear other people have had away.
Mm-hmm.
So like people that work in my lab now that have students that have kids that are in high school and getting mm-hmm. ready for college, or if I have high school kids that do volunteer mm-hmm. work in my lab during the summer, I'm like a guidance counselor for old colleges, you know. And it was because I think I just wasn't exposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even if I was not the kind of person who would have gone away, but my exposure to it was very
mm-hmm.
limited.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that my parents didn't go to college, it was a big mystery. Most of my friends' parents didn't go to college.
Mm-hmm.
So the information that we had access to was very limited.
Mm-hmm.
And what to mimic...
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know what to mimic. There was nothing to mimic. And the high school guidance counselors, this is where I think Mary Lewis has changed. Now they're with the times and they try mm-hmm. to put people into all kinds of colleges, you know, the best that they can. At the time, a lot of them were old nuns and they advocated, not that they only pushed Catholic schools, but that's what they knew best.
Sure, sure.
And that's what they could give you the best advice
sure.
on. Most didn't go mm-hmm. to Catholic school mm-hmm. for college.
Mm-hmm.
But it was through their parents
mm-hmm.
and relatives that they knew of these mm-hmm. other places. It was not through the guidance counselors
mm-hmm.
then.
Mm-hmm.
So Mary Lewis has changed that way.
Yeah.
And that was essential.
Mm-hmm.
That they get more on the ball with mm-hmm. that. So, commuter college is not something I advocate. It certainly, you can do well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't fault the education that I got at Queens College. They have great teachers there, great courses, and it was very affordable.
Mm-hmm.
You had to make it what you wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't set up for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably too easy to fall through the cracks
mm-hmm.
in a place
mm-hmm.
like that. So maybe 12 years of discipline saved me from falling through the cracks over
maybe.
There.
Maybe.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk a little bit about the program that you were in there, but before we do, I want to just go back for a second, because we didn't talk at all about your social life, and, you know, here you were in this all-girls school, which for many reasons was very good,
mm-hmm.
But did you date in high school? Were you allowed to? Did you have a social life?
Yeah, well, they had dances. Mm-hmm. And the dances would be advertised at the boys' schools. Mm-hmm. So I went to a lot of the dances. And in the neighborhood, mm-hmm. I knew a lot of the boys that I grew up with.
Right.
So I dated. When did I start? Somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. By junior year, I had a boyfriend, mm-hmm. somewhat, but, you know, that was loose terms for me. Huh. You know, going out on a date was enough for me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they at least they had mixers and mm-hmm. dances and stuff that they mm-hmm. set up. Mm-hmm. So the school tried to organize social things, mm-hmm. and then we would get advertisements when the boys' schools had dances that they set up. And then, like mm-hmm. I say, within the neighborhood,
yeah.
Okay. You just know.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's go back to college then. I noticed from your resume that you have a Bachelor of Arts degree, which is. And yet you were a science major. In most schools, you get a Bachelor of Science degree.
Not Queens College. I don't think they're accredited to give out a Bachelor of Science. Mm-hmm. I remember arguing about this a little bit in my senior year. Because it didn't dawn on me until then that the degree was going to be a Bachelor of Arts. And mm-hmm. I said, out of, I think it's 120 credits or 122 mm-hmm. credits that I had to take in 4 mm-hmm. years, more than 80 credits are in science courses. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how could this be a Bachelor of Arts degree? Mm-hmm. And they said, because Queens College gives out a Bachelor of Arts degree. Even my master's degree, which yeah. was 100% biology, is a Master of Arts. Mm-hmm. And it's because Queens College is accredited to give out bachelor's and master's of arts. Mm-hmm. And they said, tough nuts. You have a Bachelor of Arts in biology and a Master of Arts in biology. Mm-hmm. People will have to understand biology is a science.
Was it ever a problem for you?
No.
No. Okay.
The thing that was a problem was when, after I finished my postdoc, mm-hmm. I went looking for jobs, or 2 years into my postdoc, I went mm-hmm. looking for jobs, and I applied to Cornell Medical College. I went to my boss first and I said, Harvey, do you know anywhere in New York? I want to go back to New York. From the day that I left New York to go to Boston, I knew I was coming back. So I said to him, look, I want to go back to New York. Do you have any friends or colleagues or connections back in New York? Just to call to see what departments are hiring. Mm-hmm. I might miss an advertisement here or there. So he started calling around to a few places, and that was a small miracle, because in the whole history of the Lotus Lab, no one ever got Harvey to make a phone call for them for a job. And to me, I just felt one of the reasons that I have chosen to work with this man is because of who he is, not just what I can learn from him as a scientist, but the value of having a letter with MIT, right. Whitehead Institute letterhead, and signed by Harvey Lotus, but his connections,
sure.
that he may be able to open a door that I wouldn't even know existed. He's not going to open a door that he thinks mm-hmm. I can't deal with. He's not going to want me to fall on my nose. If not for any other reason, I'll make him look bad, mm-hmm. right? So my feeling was that I can get more than the obvious from working with this guy as my postdoc mentor. And he, I went to him, I had to be persistent with him because he was not used to doing that. And I guess other people who had asked him, either he just outright said no or he procrastinated to the point where they never followed up on it. And my feeling was, this is a very important point in my life and in my career. I am going to stick my nails in his back if I have to. So I stayed on him and stayed on him and everyone in the lab. It had been known throughout the lab, Lodish does not do this, period. And I said, doesn't he realize what a great asset it is to the people that he's training? He's accepting all these people in his lab, and this is some great thing that he can do as a mentor for them. I can't believe he won't do it. And what had happened was, apparently he hadn't done it, and it became like folklore. And people just didn't ask.
Stopped asking.
And my feeling was, well, I am going to make sure that he won't do it by asking. Give him a chance to turn me down. And when I went to him, he had this look on his face. Like, oh, what a novel concept. And I said, well, you're a big scientist. Lots of people. You know lots of people. Do you know anyone in New York that you can call? And then what he said was, make a list and tell me who you want me to call. And I said, well, I don't know who you know in New York, but I'll give you a list of all the schools that are there, and then you could tell me who you know there. And I'll help you. I'll get as many phone numbers as I can. If you don't have the phone numbers, I'll help in any way. But I need, and I want you to help me with this. And, you know, he procrastinated a bit, and I had to ask several times. And then finally he said, come with me now into my office, and we'll make some phone calls. And he put the speakerphone on and wanted me, he wanted everything to be completely above board, where I would know who he called, when he called, what was said. So he called around to several people in New York, Columbia, and then Cornell Med. One person in particular. And this guy at Cornell Med, who had a position of great authority, he was chairman at the time and soon to be dean of sciences, he asks hard. He doesn't realize it's a speakerphone, or that maybe he knew it was speakerphone, because he always sounds like someone's in a fish tank when when they put the speakerphone on. But he didn't know that I was sitting in the room. So he says to Lodish, so tell me about this one. And Harvey kind of goes through what my project was, what my accomplishments in his lab was, what he thought my strengths were. So this guy turns and says, well, where did she go to college? He says, Queens College. Then he says, where did she get her PhD? Where'd she go to graduate school? He said, she stayed at Queens College, so her PhD is from City University. And he goes, why did she do that? Why would anybody do that? And Harvey said, well, why are you asking this? She got a lot of publications from her PhD thesis in highly respected journals. Half of my thesis was published in the journal Molecular Cellular Biology, and the other half, or most of it, was in Genetics, which is the flagship journal of the American Genetic Society. So for geneticists and molecular geneticists, my thesis were in top-ranked journals. They were not Cell Science and Nature papers, but most of us don't routinely get those. So, and they were, it was not only one paper or even two. I got six papers, and most of them I was first author. So at that point, when I'm looking for a job as an independent investigator, mm-hmm. why the issue of where I went to college or where I went to graduate school mm-hmm. should come up, mm-hmm. as opposed to what were the quality of the papers that I published as a graduate student? What did I work? What was my training at? What area mm-hmm. of science? And then as a postdoc, how did I build on that? Did I change fields? Did mm-hmm. I grow in different ways? And what, you know, will I be doing as an independent? And this guy was harping on the fact that I went to the City University of New York as if I was mutant. Mm-hmm. And my blood pressure was going up while I was sitting in that room, and I couldn't open up my mouth because it was not clear to him that I was sitting in the room mm-hmm. listening to this. Mm-hmm. It would have been inappropriate to do that. So afterwards, so what he said was, well, my department may be hiring, but if not, there are other departments here that I could pass her CV on to. She's really good, isn't she? And Harvey said, yes, I wouldn't have called you if I didn't think that. So I thought the issue was over. I sent my CV in follow-up mm-hmm. to this person who shall remain nameless. and I got an interview, not in his department, mm-hmm. but in the physiology department at Cornell. And I went on the interview. Actually, I think I had gone on 8 interviews in and around the New York City area. And nearly every place that I went to, I got offered the job the same day. There was no waiting period or anything. So it was almost like a joke Lotish mm-hmm. made when I would come back to Boston. He wanted to know, okay, what offer did you get this time? So it wasn't even, did you yeah. get the job offer? It was, how big of an offer uh-huh. were you able to negotiate on the first interview? Right. And I, you know, I didn't even realize that that was atypical. Mm-hmm. But what happened was, at Cornell, they offered me the position, and then what they offered to do was to make me, put me up, nominate me for a Cornell Scholar Award, which gives you like an extra $100,000 or $200,000 startup, and I guess something else that you put on your CV that separates mm-hmm. you from others. And what they said for this award was that I had to get letters of recommendation, 3 letters of recommendation for this. And they said, well, you should get like David Baltimore, mm-hmm. who at the time was the director of the Whitehead. And, I said, well, I have Harvey Lotish. I have Corinne Michaels, who was my mentor at Queens mm-hmm. College. And I had, I had Jeff Flyer, who was, he had been a visiting scientist in the Lotish lab. Mm-hmm. He was at the Beth Israel Hospital at Harvard Med and was, I collaborated with someone in his division. So Jeff knew me. He was in the same sort of field that I was in. And so I got a letter from Jeff. And, well, they said, well, I said, well, Harvey's a member of the National Academy, and that comes with Whitehead MIT letterhead. They said, well, can you get someone other than Corinne Michaels? I said, she's my thesis advisor. Harvey and Corinne know me best. Corinne knows me even better than Harvey because she had me for longer and at a different stage in my career and a much smaller lab than Lotish Lab. And they said, well, why not David Baltimore? I said, David Baltimore will write a letter saying that he's played softball with me at, MIT, softball games mm-hmm. 2 times and that I can hit. And he's seen me in the elevator several times and that I've helped the Institute, you know, when they've needed press releases or whatever. But David doesn't know my science. He doesn't know me personally.
Sure.
He just knows me to say hello. And I don't want to ask him for a letter. And then they said, well, there's someone here at Cornell that is uncomfortable with the fact that you got your degree through Queens College and the City University of New York. Don't understand why didn't you go to Harvard? And that had come up on that speakerphone. The same thing. Why didn't she go to Harvard?
Yeah.
As if everyone that goes there has to come out great. And that anyone that would have gone where I went couldn't be great.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, that irritant had come back. So now my blood pressure shoots up again. And I said, I am not going to even apply for a Cornell Scholar Award. I haven't even accepted your job offer. I said, but now I want to know who at Cornell has a problem with my education. And I want to see this person face to face. And we're going to discuss this. Oh, no, it wouldn't be right for me to tell you. I said, well, then, fine, you can withdraw my application right now. Well, they didn't want that.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted me to go there and to be a faculty member there. So I said the only way I would go would be if I met who the person was. I needed to know, is this someone that could influence my career path there? If they think it's a problem now, we got to get this out in the open that it's not a problem. And we go forward and we never bring it up again.
But they wanted to hire you, though, in spite of this.
Or it is a problem,
mm-hmm.
and it will always be a problem because that will never change.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that it has to be a problem or you wouldn't be mm-hmm. bringing it up. If you're able to function as an independent chair,
mm-hmm.
why are you saying this to me?
Mm-hmm.
So he tells me who it is, and it's the same one from the phone call.
Mm.
So I said, I want a second interview, and I want you to put this guy on my list. So now I go back a second time, and I'm sitting in this guy's office. He's treating me like the Queen of England. No evidence whatsoever of him being uncomfortable with anything on my record. Complete and total phony. And now my blood is boiling.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to see how long he was going to go on playing this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked down at my watch. There was about 10 minutes left. He's talking about my research, my publications, like he thinks all of this is great,
mm-hmm.
fabulous,
mm-hmm.
and not letting on that he has any problem with anything. So I'm finding it tough to believe that this is really a problem. So then I figured, well, I didn't come back here and put myself and them through this for nothing. Now I'm going to have to bring the subject up myself. So how do I do it? I felt the best way was just head on.
Mm-hmm.
So I turned and I said, yeah, I don't mean to change the subject of the conversation, Dr. So-and-so, but there's an issue that, you know, it's gnawing at me, and I just have to clarify it. I've been told you have a problem with the fact that I got my PhD and my degrees through City University. You would have thought that I did root canal work on this guy without anesthesia. He shot up out of his chair, denied completely that, you know, but his mere reaction, if it had been false,
mm-hmm.
first off, the chairman of the physiology department, you know, would never have told me someone else sure. if they hadn't done it, right? And why would he react so, you know, have such a visceral response? I would think if it were wrong, he would be with a very confused look and say, you know, gee, you know, I've never said anything like that. You must be mistaken. No, this guy went, it was stereotypical behavior. And he says, I said, oh, well, you know, gee, I'm sorry if it's wrong, but I've been told that you have a problem and that you don't understand why I didn't go to Harvard.
Let me just change the tape.